Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined, as always, but at a bit of a distance, we've got a big technical budget going on today to be joined all the way from Oakland, California, the Montana Miracle Man, Marvelous Max Ada. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty well. How are you guys doing?
They're good, I think. They'll tell us in the comments if you're good. So today we're going to be talking to you about USAW Nationals, but before we do that, quick thank you to our sponsors, Grind Sports Nutrition, Virus International, Trifecta Nutrition, and Quaaludes and Quest Bars, It's a Lifestyle. So we just got back a few days ago from USAW Nationals held just outside of Chicago, Illinois, and was a pretty successful weekend for the team. I think it was a pretty successful weekend for USA weightlifting, and we're going to want to talk to you about some of the highs, maybe a couple of the lows, and just give you a look at the weekend from our perspective. All right, so thanks for bearing with us on our unique camera setup today, but you know, Max is taking some time up in NorCal after the meet, so this is the best we could do for you guys. There's probably five main points that we want to talk about in regards to this past Nationals competition, and some positive, some negative, and let's lead it off with the positive. So, Coach Max, how did you feel about the Team Juggernaut performance?
Overall, I was pretty happy. You know, we had quite a few really good performances, you know, starting with Michael Fox, a national champion. This is the second time him being national champion, so that was really cool. He took a crack at an American record clean and jerk. Missed the jerk, but you know, it's always good when people are attempting those numbers because it means that we're getting close. You know, Alyssa did great because she came out of a little bit of an injury with her elbow. We didn't really say much about it, and had the best meet of her life. Really fought super hard for it.
Yeah, definitely didn't say much about it because even I did not really know that was going on with her elbow.
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't want to, like, say it and then have everybody – I mean, that was probably the tightest battle I've seen because Alyssa's class, the 48s, was stacked. You had Kathleen Winters and Megan Siegert, and both of those girls snatched in the high 70s. Alyssa edged everybody out by a kilo.
Yeah, it was 76, 77, 78.
Yeah. And so that was super tight battle in that class. And then the clean and jerks were also pretty solid. I mean, everybody was taking shots at good weights. I mean, it was a really tight class. You know, there's always the injury thing. Like if your competitors know you're injured, does that really change anything? Cause they're still going to try and train hard and lift big weights. But I think it does help to be, you know, you don't want to just expose everything and then have them that much more confident that they're going to, you know, beat you. So, you know, we didn't. And she came out and she's a gamer, you know, she's a super awesome performer. And that was awesome. So, you know, started off really well. That was a really cool, like big boost for all of us to come out of the gates strong like that.
Definitely. Yeah, set the tone for the whole weekend, you know. Particularly on the men's side with our last team experience being American Open, where we let off and Mike Fox bombed out in the snatch. It was like, at least from the team perspective, the meet was done before it had even started.
Exactly. So that was cool. That was really good to have that momentum going into it. It was just a positive experience for everyone. I think also, too, it lends itself to showing that, like, you know, people maybe get too into their head about, like, I'm this kind of person or I'm that kind of person. You know, oh, I always do bad or I always do well. Like, it can change at any meet, and it can be a good meet or a bad meet. You know, it's all depends on how you approach it and how your training was and all that. So it was a good start. You know, Courtney battled it out with Hogan. You know, she struggled to make the lift she needed to kind of catch her. Those two are really, like, they're going to battle out back and forth until someone else comes out of there, until another 58 can catch. You know, no one's going to catch Courtney in the snatch, and no one's going to catch Caitlin in the clean and jerk right now, because they're both really far ahead of everybody. So it was basically those two battling back and forth, and, you know, Courtney won it in Reno, and then Caitlin came back and bettered her total here and won in Chicago. So, you know, that's going to be one of those things that's always going back and forth with them. Kristen's class was way more competitive than I had expected or had anticipated. The 63s had a girl snatching 91 from the B session,
yeah,
and jerking like 107. And, you know, from a coaching perspective, it was a mistake to have her in the B session, because she could have probably maybe even won the thing if she had a chance to take the weight she needed to win it. But she had zero chance of ever taking the winning lift from the B session unless she was just ahead of everybody. But still, like, that was like maybe her second meet. Super, super competitive. There were, you know, Kristen did 89 and 104, which was a really good meet for her. And she was eighth place. And the winning snatch was 92. So 3 kilos separated, you know, first from tying. I think Kristen tied for third and fourth. So ended up like fifth in the snatch, maybe.
Yeah.
3 kilos is really, really tight competition.
Yeah, particularly comparing it to the American Open, where Kristen got third in the snatch at 86.
Yeah.
And fourth in the total at 189.
Yeah.
To come back from 189 to be fourth in the total and at American Open just 6 months ago. And now for her to make 193 and that be eighth. I mean, obviously more people showed up. We're still missing our two best 63s Mary Peck and Maddie Myers. But incredibly deep class, tons of athletes. And a comment that had been made by we had Ed Cohen visiting us there, is how much different the athletes look from a physique standpoint. And, Pope, a prime example of this, that there's much more muscular, much more athletic looking, and that class maybe more so than any of the others.
Yeah, and it's not to say that, like, before we had, like, less athletic people. I think there's a combination of things. I think one factor is you're getting more talented athletes coming out of the woodwork. So you're going to have more of the, you know, quote unquote genetic freaks, you know, the people that are just more muscular, more built for lifting. And you have a lot better training. You know, you have way more coaches that are a lot more knowledgeable. So, you know, you're getting people that come out of it that are just producing. So that was actually, there was a lot of fun. It was a challenge for me in the back, because it was myself and Joanne, and then, Jacob Heise and JP were helping, because it was actually three people going simultaneously. And that would actually be one big criticism I have of USAW, is putting A sessions at the same time in multiple platform meets.
Let's save that for a little bit later. But continuing on with the team before we move on to the next people, Kristen Pope, again, can't say this enough. I made a big post about it at the Arnold, where she had all the issues with the flight getting out there for the Arnold and still came in, even though she was there 24 hours later than planned, only, a few, like a half a day before the meet.
Yeah.
The same thing here. She had some rough training going into the meet.
She hadn't done a clean. She hadn't, in the last 2 weeks when Zygmunt was out here, when I left, she had done 105 on a Friday. And the next time she successfully made over 90 kilos was in the warm-up room at meet.
Yeah, so she had this rough training going in. And then at the meet, maybe the roughest part of it is her first warm-up. The first thing she did after introductions was start muscle snatch with the empty bar and just whacks herself in the face with
right in the nose.
Yeah, right in the nose with the bar. And yeah, I'm walking in the back and I see her and I was like, holy shit, why is Kristen crying? Like, why does it look like her eyes are all teared up? I was like, we haven't done anything yet. Yeah. Like, there's nothing that's going on. So she whacks herself in the nose. Surprisingly, doesn't break her nose. Like, gave herself a bloody nose with that. And then to still go out and lift really well. I think she's shown herself to be a very tough competitor, a much tougher competitor than I think anyone out there in social media world gives her credit for.
You know, in my own fault, I totally screwed up her opening clean and jerk. I didn't get the change in on time, and she had to run out and grab the bar and start pulling, and she started the lift at 1 second on the clock and was successful. And, you know, I mean, maybe that's what worked, was she just had to do it without thinking, but the fact that she had to run out there and grab a weight she hadn't made in the gym in a couple weeks and was very heady about and was struggling to conceptualize and put together, ran out and did it and made it, and it was really good, is just, I mean, speaks volumes to her resilience. It was really, really a tough competitor. So, you know, that was overall, I mean, she really killed it there.
Yeah. And if you guys want to see, you know, Kristen does a great job with her own YouTube channel. So you can find her at KRIS, the number 10, Pope, Chris 10 Pope. She's got a couple part kind of recap of her experience at Nationals, so make sure you guys go check that out.
Yeah. And then you know, Anthony and Sam Ernst competed in the same session, same time. Sam Ernst didn't do so hot. He bombed in the snatch. You know, and a big part of that is probably just us setting more realistic numbers and establishing a better protocol for what to open with, what to take, you know, and bomb outs are always, you got to be careful with bomb outs. If you miss lifts, you know, if you miss a lift here and there, you have a pretty definitive reason as to why. A bomb out can be a couple different, you know, it could be mental, it could be mistakes, you know, you could press lifts out and bomb. I mean, you got to be careful not to just throw everything out the window and turn around and say, oh, it's the training or this, that. I got to do everything different. But at the same time, you have to evaluate, like, what really is causing you to fail those lifts. Because he also bombed at American Open, so not the best track record for Sam. He's young, and, you know, I think probably, to be fair, I let his a youthful exuberance to take big weights, get the best of me, and think that he was a little more prepared than he was for those numbers.
And I think he's, you know, with online coaching and stuff being so prevalent now, a bit of a cautionary tale in terms of online coaching, that we live in Southern California. Sam lives in Virginia. And, you know, it's, if you're training in that situation, which can be great and can be extremely effective, Alyssa Ritchie is making international teams and winning national championship through true pure remote coaching, but the communication has to be great. And if it's not being communicated to the coach that, hey, you know, I weigh 89 but I compete as an 85, that's a big thing to factor in. And Sam and I talked about that for a while the next day while watching one of the other sessions. I don't want to glaze over, you know, we're past him in the body weights, but don't want to glaze over Jacob Heise, who's one of Pomp's guys, longtime guy, very good CrossFit competitor, making more focus on weightlifting. You know, phenomenal 130 kilo snatch in the 77s, ended up actually tying for third place. And then because there's no body weight rule now and a unique interpretation, I guess, of have to do it first, which I interpret 3 PM to be before 8 PM, but I guess first attempts take precedent over second attempts, ended up losing out on what would have been his first national medal in the snatch. So I ended with 4th in the snatch, but he did a great job. He's just a really athletic guy, great team guy.
Yeah. Pomp's done a great job with Jacob. Jacob's a pleasure to work with too. Cause he's just so down to earth, and he's just like Pomp. It's really funny because the two of them are just like, they're so just relaxed and composed and just, they're just having a big smile on their face, having a good time. So yeah, that was really good for him. And then, I forgot, Courtney Chan in the 53s going with Courtney Batchelor, a similar scenario to Sam Ernst. She didn't do so hot. She bombed, there. And again, we talked with her about some of the factors that we need to work on, body weight, cutting, this kind of thing is a big deal. And then also, us picking reasonable attempts, obviously picking the right attempts, so not to leave her out there. And then, simultaneously, Kristen's lifting, Sam Ernst is lifting, and then Pomp was also in that session. So Pomp, I was really like to give Pomp a huge credit and Charlotte too, because Pomp came out here, he came out to the meet, had a baby, 10 days before, 15 days, right?
Yeah, about 20. Yeah, so congratulations to Pomp and his girlfriend Charlotte on Rocco Leonardo.
Yeah, I think he probably has abs. He was born with abs for sure,
and a mustache. If your name is Rocco Leonardo Pomponio,
yeah, it's a sort of Italian name.
He'll never. That kid will never have a shirt with sleeves his whole life.
That's true. But he came out, and really Pomp was just there to help support the team and kind of, put a meet under his belt and all those. And he did, didn't have like any kind of, monster day, still hit 140, 174, which is better than he had been doing in training. So, if you look at it from the perspective of a heavy training day, it was a really good step in the right direction for him.
Yeah.
It just happened to be nationals on the stage.
For Pomp too.
Really good. It's important to manage expectations and manage what we're doing, because there's no way we could go into that thinking, oh, you're going to do 155, 185. Yeah. And that's not the point. The point was to go score points, be part of it, stay involved in it, and then get back to your life, and take care of the baby and Charlotte and move on from there.
Yeah, so it was about nine weeks before the meet. Well, so 11 weeks before the meet, Pomp got a cortisone shot in his knee. He had talked to an orthopedic surgeon, maybe surgery was going to be necessary. So had this stuff going on. So he gets the cortisone shot and we has a couple weeks of this, just seeing how his body responds to it. And then I remember we all sat down, you, me, Pomp, Dr. Quinn, Dr. Joe, sat down. All right, what is our plan for 9 weeks? What do we consider success? And I remember us saying in that meeting, if you go to nationals and do 45-75, like that is a huge win.
Yeah.
And it was right there. I mean, he did 40 on his opening snatch and then missed 45 in front of him twice, but it was there. 74, 75, those are the same. That he made good progress. He made the forward positive momentum that we needed for him to build on. Because Pomp is, he's a national champion. He's multiple time American Open champion. He's very, very capable to lift the weights that could be putting him on a world team in this year, next year. Just a talented guy. So,
yeah. I mean, very, very good for him. And the goal, with Pomp, as with everybody, is to make progress and be steady here and bring him into shape, when time allows, when that opportunity is there. Awesome for those guys. Next up, we had Nicole. Nicole, who lifted in the 69s, had a really good meet, went 4 for 6, PR snatch in competition, PR clean and jerk in competition, the only PRs that really count, and just a solid overall day. Nicole's a good competitor. Just she's been in sports her whole life and just knows how to behave, knows how to handle herself, and just did a good job. I really wouldn't say anything she did or didn't do. Unfortunately, I think on her third clean and jerk, she stood up from it and started blacking out.
Yeah.
And you could see her, she's standing there and she's kind of shaking, then her knees buckled, and that was, that's the end of that. So it's kind of a bummer, but I'm pretty sure she would have made the jerk. She's been a really good jerker and traditionally. So, you know, that's good progress for her, but, you know, she needs to gain some weight and fill out the class and then move on and just keep plugging away as she has been.
Thank you to Virus International, sponsor of the Jug Life podcast. Visit virusintl.com and use Jug, J-U-G-G, for 10% off your next order. Well, and something that's, you know, probably a good teachable moment from Nicole's performance and something that people watching the live stream were not aware of, interested to get your perspective on this, mm-hmm. is what to do when you miss a lift in the back, how to react when you miss a lift in the back. So Nicole took 74 as her last warm-up,
yeah,
opened at 77, makes it, and then because she was in the B session, 69 B session, in the B sessions at this meet, everyone's lifting the same weights. You know, everyone is in with their entry total is the qualifying total. So she had like 14 lifts or something in was going to be between her opener and second attempt. So you go back in the back to stay warm and to take some lifts. And she proceeded to miss 75 kilos, 2 kilos less than she had just lifted on the platform 3 times in a row. So she missed 75. 90 seconds later, 2 minutes later, you know, she's a CrossFitter. She could be doing them every 10 seconds if she needed. Miss 75. Yeah. Miss 75. Yeah. Go out on the platform, miss 80, and then come back and make 80. What advice do you have to lifters, to coaches, when things are not going the way they should in the back room?
One thing that we have to look at that, there's really like, it's like you have to play triage, right, with what's going on. So, you know, one thing is to always be aware of what the situation is going to be like at Nationals. There's going to be, in any of these sessions, unless you're at the very top, there's going to be a lot of lifts that are the same. You might have 15 attempts between your opening snatch and your second attempt, and that may be 2 kilos or 3 kilos different. So you have to be physically in shape enough to tolerate doing more lifts in the back, you know, physical things all aside, the mental side of going in the back and missing a lift, missing your last warm-up, missing your attempts at waving up and down, in which Nicole did. Alyssa missed some lifts in the back too. The biggest thing I think from a coaching standpoint is you have to anticipate the lifter. Or do you have nervous lifters? Do you have confident lifters? Do you have overconfident lifters? So, you know, Nicole is certainly not overconfident. She's very realistic about her abilities. And seeing what she did, you know, if the lifter is going to miss a lift, you got to decide right off the bat and have a plan. You know, how are you going to approach them? Are you going to fire them up and tell them, hey, come back and make it right now, and they're going to come back and do it? Are you going to say, it's not a big deal, don't worry about it, it'll be different on the platform? You know, every coach and every athlete have to pick what their strategy is, what to do. The one thing to not do is freak out as a coach. You can't stress the athlete out by saying, oh my God, what's happening? You know, you're missing, like... And the other thing too is like one thing I see a lot of at some of these meets, and not really from the more experienced coaches, but generally less experienced coaches, it's like they're teaching people how to lift in the warm-up room. I mean, once you get there, coaching cues here and there, a few of them speckled into the warm-ups is all you need. I mean, if you're telling somebody, hey, you gotta push your knees back and get over the bar more and do this and do that and like, you know, try this and like make sure it's already too late. I mean, you can't change anything, you know, you really can't change much without training anyways, but you're not gonna come in the warm-ups and fix someone's technique. The best you can do is reinforce their confidence and reinforce a few subtle keys, you know. Hone in on the one thing that you need to do to make the lift that if you didn't say it, they wouldn't do it. And then, you know, let them go.
I think in regards to the, you know, to handling your own emotions as the coach to help the athlete handle theirs. You know, I'm in the back with you guys for a lot of this stuff, and I'm just there to be there, you know, to take videos and to cheer people on and put a weight on here or there. But I find myself having to be particularly mindful of that, seeing someone miss, you know, just kind of biting my tongue and just being like, all right, you know, it's all right. You're good. And it's like, I've seen this with babies. You have a baby and they're trying to walk and they fall down and they don't know if it hurt or not. So they turn around and they look at their parents. And if their parents,
what their reaction should be.
If the parents kind of laugh and like, oh, ha, 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 then the baby just gets up and they're fine. If the parents, oh my God, are you okay? Then they're like, shit, something's wrong. And they react to that. So that's such an important part of coaching. And, you know, we can talk about program design and all that stuff. And that's very important. And that's the science of coaching. And, you know, and then the art of coaching, or the soft science, I guess the psychology of it, is going to play such a big role when it is that the back room, when it is the in competition stuff, and knowing your athletes and understand that coaching, successful coaching, is a relationship between athlete and coach.
Yes.
That you know, we took 14 lifters with us to nationals and really have 14 pretty unique personalities in that who are all going to respond differently to different reactions in the back. Because we've seen Colin miss lifts in the back. We've seen Alyssa miss lifts.
Yep.
Courtney's miss lifts. Nicole's miss lifts. They've all missed lifts in the back. And you know, your reaction, Joanne's reaction, how that shapes the athlete's reaction goes a long way to if those misses in the back turn into misses where it counts.
Yeah. You know, and that's something you, as a coach, the longer you do it, the more you get comfortable with your personality, who you are. And that's why there's different coaches, different athletes. I mean, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to turn around and yell at you and, you know, and berate somebody for missing. And you know, somebody may do really well with that. If you threaten them right after they miss, you know, then they might come back and perform really well. There's people like that for sure.
Yeah, we call it the North Korean model.
Yeah. your family will be executed and a bill for the bullet will be mailed to you. So, you know, it's like that's a personal preference from the athletes and coaches' perspective. You know, big thing is just doing the right thing and being aware of what the right thing is. You know, you learn it, learn the athletes, and you form a relationship and rapport. If I say, hey, you're fine, don't worry about it, you're okay, they need to trust that that's the right answer. Even though inside I might be, you know, shitting brick, fuck, this is not good.
I definitely remember your reaction. You and Damron meeting eyes after Colin missed the
at the AO. Colin missed the American Open. Colin missed a 185 clean and jerk before his opener.
His last warm up.
I was like squatting down watching it, and right after he missed, I like rolled my eyes and turned to my right, and Nathan Damron was sitting right there, and he looked at me and I looked at him. We both looked at this. It was like this moment where we both looked like, oh shit, how's this going to go? He was probably a little more happy and I was a little more nervous, but, Colin, you know, Colin crushed it after that. Same thing happened here. Colin did a real shaky jerk on his last one. And then went out there and destroyed it. That's something that's interesting, actually, as just a moment for all younger coaches. People's last clean and jerk in the warm-ups, I have seen many times, that is the hardest lift of the competition. Because there's really basically the most anxiety, because it's the heaviest weight you're taking in the back. So a lot of it rides on how is this going to feel. And then it's also the least amount of excitement, because you're not in front of the crowd yet. So you might see somebody take their last clean and jerk, and it's their last clean and jerk warm up, and it's very tough and it looks rough and it's hard. They go on the platform and it looks like the bar is 10 kilos lighter. Just something I've noticed many times. So it's like you gotta be just confident and aware, and not making too many adjustments about things, especially if people miss, you know, you just Make good choices. Make the choices that you think are best and stick with them. And then learn and do it the next time better. I think, you know, it also helps to have really good athletes. I mean, yeah. I say all this, but I mean, Nicole's a fantastic athlete. I mean, Alyssa's an incredible athlete. Everyone there is a really, really solid athlete. So it's like, you know, when I say, oh, just let them go out and do it, like, that may work for the small group of people I have that are super talented. But, yeah.
Yeah, going on, we're on the 94s now. Yeah.
So Colin was next. Colin, Colin was in really good shape here. Came in with the intent of going 174-204. And went out there. Warm-ups went off without a hitch. He was a little bit rusty, a little rough-looking in the back. But it was just taking him time to kind of warm up. And then smashed 162, or what I thought was a great attempt. Got two whites and a red. Went in the back. Sat down. At this time, there's no one even close. Dameron had bombed. And, you know, no one else in that category can really contend with Colin. And really, if Colin snatches well, no one's going to fight with him. I mean, no one's there. So we're sitting there on 162. I go to change it. Our plan is to go 62 to 70 and then to 74 because he still needed a total, you know, for the world. So we wanted to set up at least a decent total. Then I get this jury stop.
Yeah,
and they stopped it and took it away from him.
It was like 30 seconds, like almost 30 seconds after.
It was, oh yeah, it was a ways in. So, you know, whatever. Personally, my personal opinion on red lights and whatnot is I get frustrated and angry, you know, and obviously throw pencils at the table or whatever I do. I get pissed because I'm angry because, you know, they're fucking with my team. They're fucking with my people. But from a professional standpoint, you just have to accept that, you know, you're going to get good calls and you're going to get bad calls and it's going to come out in the wash and you do the best you can. You know, I will say this, the best coaching cue you'll ever hear in your whole life are three red lights, because you get that and the next thing you do, you come back on the lift, it's going to be better. So we said, you know, from a strategic standpoint, it was just smarter to take 62 because he didn't really need to do anything silly. Take 62 on the next one. It was just a joke. You know, it was an easy lift.
Yeah, smash 62, and the people in the audience definitely saw it. The people in the live stream may have seen it, but you know, he's the grumpy cat, like not the smiliest guy to begin with. Colin, I think, tried to blow up the jury with the look that he gave them. It was the Death Star, like this eye just built up the laser and just right at the jury as he was walking off the stage after making the 62. They definitely had a motivated by hate lifter there.
You know, because he and I both knew right after that jury overturn, we weren't going to take a shot at the record, right?
Yeah.
Which just, you know, that pisses you off, you know, and he was ready because he came back on the third and he just destroyed 70. It was a beautiful 170 snatch. One of the easiest I've seen him do. You know, I should have yelled at him to double it because he's been trying to double 170 for a while and he probably could have done it right there. Anyways, you know, that was what it was. Going into the clean and jerk, it was the same kind of thing. Well, not the same kind of thing. It was no competition there. I kind of knew, okay, Dameron's going to probably take a shot at 200. We want to take a smart attempt to buy some time, you know, so that we can get other people in between our second attempt clean and jerk and the third one at 204. So we called 199, knowing that, you know, people are going to take 200 or someone's going to try it. You know, first clean jerk at 192 was easy. 199 was really solid. And then, took 204. The clean was very, very strong, the cleans have just been improving, you know, for the last 6 months, 8 months.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing for me as a fan watching, you know, having watched Colin now from 2014 Nationals or in, let's say, 2014 Arnold now through 2017 Nationals. His improved cleans, improved leg strength has really added years to my life, because before it was just such a, you know, the emotional struggle.
Yeah.
Even watching him clean 93, 95, like, is he going to stand it up? And if he does, does he have any legs left? Now they're just afterthoughts.
Yeah, the cleans are just routine, which they should be. You know, as a weightlifter who's trained well, the clean is just a utility to finish the lift. I mean, it should never be a concern in your mind. And he certainly looks like that. He's a very powerful athlete. You know, the 204, he just kind of made a little error on the jerk. And you know, I don't remember if he shorted it or cut it, but he kind of caught it a little forward or left himself behind the bar. You know, it probably had he taken like another couple seconds and just, you know, focused a little more and had stuck it, he would have been there. I think sometimes you kind of rush, you're a little tired, you're a little off, and so you just kind of – you don't take that extra second to make it perfect. And, you know, Colin is a guy who's very methodical and very meticulous, so, you know, really just a small error. He jerked 210 in training off the blocks and 205 for a double off the blocks, you know, a few weeks before that. So I know he can make the jerk, and he's done 204 in training. It's just, you know, a little error.
In the clean and jerk, that's really just like the walkout and the squat now. So maybe Colin could join like a monolift weightlifting federation.
They should just get rid of the why clean it? I mean, everybody can clean it, you know. And you're a good guy, so here's a white light. No matter what we're talking about, we find a way to bash multi-ply powerlifting.
Well, I mean, that's what the people write in the reviews. That's what they want.
It just lends itself to being abused so much.
They're asking for it. We also had James Townsend in the 94A session. James has been struggling for weeks, man, really months, to be honest, with his elbow problems. Kind of started as a bicep issue. He had torn his bicep maybe a year or so ago in grid, and then... Yeah, you know, just still trying to train hard on it. He's had a lot of problems with that, so hadn't been doing the training in the jerk particularly. I mean, he hadn't jerked at all coming into it. So, you know, he snatched one for three in the snatch, but 32, two close attempts at 37. And just didn't have it in his elbow, you know, with no warm-ups, no jerks in the warm-up room.
You know that? James is the embodiment of team player. I mean, actually, everybody on the team is really awesome. I mean, James was sitting in the audience. James's family was there. James's daughter, both of them were there. Probably the best athlete in the entire building when she was there.
If you haven't seen James's older daughter on his Instagram, Princess P, the funniest little kid ever.
If you want to feel bad about yourself, watch what she can do.
Yeah, it's 3-year-old doing like 25-inch box jumps, handstand push-ups, endless cartwheels and somersaults.
She started walking at 7 months. Yeah. And is very intelligent, too. Yes. Like, really, of course. So, you know, that's, you know. Anyways, he was there the whole time, hurt. Did whatever, but he was in the stands. You know, he didn't have to be the guy who was doing that. But you know, it was awesome. I mean, he really just came through and was a team player. He's always in the back supporting everybody. He's a fantastic guy. You know, I really hope that we can get the elbow sorted out and he can start training for real. You know, and he's got some direction now. He saw some people there and they gave him some ideas and thoughts as to what to do. So I really hope he can get that stuff squared away.
Most impressive looking in the singlet for sure. He wins that medal, gold medal for James in the introduction portion of things. I will say that Jason Bonick dude who was the bronze medalist in 94 is super jacked. Phil is super jacked. Phil doesn't have the tan part down quite like Bonick and James do.
Yeah. So Colin in weightlifting years at 34 was the youngest guy on the podium.
Yeah.
Colin 34, Phil 35, Bonick 36.
Yeah.
The 94s.
94 kilo masters of disaster.
Impressive. Yeah. Yeah.
Grind Sports Nutrition is the official supplement provider of Team Juggernaut. Designed by Renaissance Periodization, there are no-nonsense supplements to fuel your hardest training. Use JUG10 at grindsupplements.com. So then moving on to Sunday, our final day of the competition, we had the two lifters. 75 yeah. kilo class was Kiana Welch. And then in the 90s, we had Laura Bariteau. So yeah. This was Q's third weightlifting meet ever. Last September, October, she did a qualifier up at Max's gym and then yep. went on to become the first champion anywhere in the world in the 90 kilo class by winning the American Open.
Yes. First woman to win a 90 kilo competition on the planet. Q's another super, super talented athlete. Q's struggled kind of up and down a little bit with knee and shoulder stuff. Her shoulder was doing some Frankenstein shit for a while there. It was just weird as hell. But doing awesome coming around now. She did fantastic in the snatch, made a PR, a competition PR, 102.
3 for 3.
3 for 3 was great. Made her first two clean and jerks, 108 and 112. And we called for 117, trying to push everybody. If she'd have made 17, that would have been a 219 total, which would have gotten silver, I believe. Because yeah. I think Stallings did 103 and 120. And Shakesha Johnson did 101. Or, yeah, 101 and...
116. I think she ended up only jerking maybe 116 or 17.
And yeah, so it was the right number, I think. Cleaned it really well, and then, you know, just a little bit of an error on the jerk. Pushed herself back from it a little bit. She doesn't have a ton of experience with split jerks, but she's gotten way better. She had to power jerk at the American Open.
It was still a question... In my head, in your head, I think in Q's own head.
Would that ask me?
What was it?
She says to me in the warm-ups, maybe the training hall, she says, yeah. So if we get into that 120 range, is it okay if I just pick various jerks, whatever feels right? And I was like, no, we're going to do a split jerk. You got to do it. You got to do that. So maybe I should have let her do whatever. I should have said, just make it. And who knows what she would have done. that would have been very interesting.
You see that there was a video going around this week of a guy who did a split jerk. And then as he went to recover, he kind of lost it in the recovery, but kept it locked out and went into a squat jerk from the split jerk.
Was he a Asian lifter?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's an old video. He like stepped 10 feet forward on the platform.
Maybe a different video.
There was this guy maybe a few years ago, maybe 2012, 2013. This guy does a split jerk, stumbles forward, steps down into a squat, maybe takes a couple of steps and then stands back up. It was incredible. Yeah, he made the lift.
Similar kind of situation. This guy didn't move too much, but... Yeah. Maybe that's going to be Q's signature.
The split, that will not be a low anxiety situation for me.
The split squat jerk, the splat jerk.
Splat, yeah. I once heard Kendrick said that he didn't know what he was going to do until he started to jerk. He had no idea. He just would go and his body would just do whatever. So
that's a bold strategy.
It worked for him to some degree.
Yeah.
So yeah, she ended up getting bronze total, silver snatch, and I want to say fourth or fifth in the clean and jerk.
Fifth in the clean and jerk, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, really good meet for her. I think that gives her an opportunity to improve maybe a stipend, and just in general a great experience for your third meet, you know. Really, really good. Very cool for her. I'm really happy with Q. She's going to keep getting better. It's also good to have a meet like that for someone like Q because it reinforces, it's some reward, but not so much that you're just victorious. And it seems like, it would have been great if everything worked out and you got really good. But when there's a little bit of struggle, that the near miss, right?
Yeah.
That near miss is really good because it motivates you. You know, in communicating with her since then, she's been highly motivated, and wants to push forward and do that. So that's a really good situation for her. I'm excited to see what she does in the future. I'm sure she can add many kilos to that total.
Yeah. Then the women's team was rounded out by our 90-kilo class lifter, who was a 75-kilo class lifter at the AO, and her and Q traded. Laura Barreto, who's a longtime athlete under Colin Burns, originally in person in Louisville, Kentucky, and now a remote athlete. And she handled herself very well. 3 for 3 in the snatch. I think at least two of those lifts were PRs, I think.
Yeah.
And then she finished 92 in the snatch. And then in the clean and jerk, you know, at this point, from a team standpoint, we went into this thinking, all right, as long as Laura totals, we're going to win. We're winning the team title for the women's, and we'll get into that in a bit. But but Colin made us sweat a little bit with some of those jerk. The opening jerk kept bumping up. But but she did that lifetime PR total, I believe. I think she made 201, 201 total. So big competition total PR. I would say a new weight class, like 12 kilos. Higher than she ever did at 75, and I think 1 kilo better in the total than she ever did in training. So it was great meet for Laura. You know, cool to see Colin doing his thing as the coach there, having a successful athlete.
Yeah, that was cool. She's improved a lot. She's a good athlete, another really good athlete, like good competitor, comes out, makes lifts, makes attempts, you know, and is really highly focused too. You can see when Laura is kind of around, she's very serious, and just, you know, puts a lot into being a good competitor. And really, I think, you know, I don't really know Laura super well, but she strikes me as kind of like Colin, and maybe a lot of that comes from Colin, but just meticulous and methodical about how she approaches the different aspects of lifting and the actual competition itself. So that was cool. Certainly for us, it was exciting to watch her that clean and jerk and feel like, you know, we added the points up. Probably premature, but
apparently,
there's another team that we did not realize was a team.
Yeah.
Not realize what was going on, but I guess the Florida LWC, from time to time, when they're feeling the need to show up with a humongous team that didn't exist before the meet, they combine forces and form a super team. Well, not really a super team, just a really big team that loads up the classes that score tons of points.
Yeah.
And so that was
my frustration in it. You know, we want to help all the individual lifters be as good as they can, but we want to win the team stuff. We won the women's team championship at the American Open. We were looking to do that at Nationals as well. Yeah, I kind of got on paper the different teams who I see as being the real competition to us based on what I'd seen at American Open and based on, you know, just looking at the lists and looking at the names. So I'm figuring, all right, it's us, it's Catalyst, Cal Strength, MASH, and that was our big competition. You know, and on Florida Elite, I see Maddie Rogers, I see Taylor Stallings, which apparently the announcer was saying her name right, and Talar, and we'd been saying her name wrong the whole time. And I was like, okay, they're going to score the points, but I didn't really know the other names. So what Florida Elite did in constructing their team, that's whatever. It was the rules. My greater frustration, I guess, is the way the scoring is set up. Just doesn't seem like it's evenly rewarding. You know, it's not rewarding the best possible lifting, and this will, it'll always be true to some degree. So the way that the scoring works is the same way it works at IWF World Championships, which is first through 25th score points. 28 points for first, 1 point for 25th, and kind of just scaled throughout that, which at Worlds, yeah, there's not 25 people in every weight class at Worlds, but it's highly, highly competitive. And,
yeah,
that, you know, we have American record holding lifters who are sometimes in a C or D session at Worlds. Yeah. So there's very, very competitive lifting, where at Nationals, you get weight classes that only have 8 people in them, something like that. And there's just massive spread between first and eighth. And, you know, maybe I'm just whining about it. And I guess it was the rules that were presented. But if you want to just win a team championship, get 248s, get 290 pluses, you know, 153, 190, and a 75, I guess. And that's going to win you the most points, because we've got Kristen Pope within 8 kilos of first place in the 63s, getting 8th place, which is 18 points. And then we have the 90-plus women, 8th place finisher out of 8.
Yeah.
60, 70 kilos behind Sarah Robles total, also getting 8th place and scoring 18 points. So it was an unpleasant surprise to find out that we had, in fact, not won the women's team championship. But
you know, if you looked at the Sinclair formula of all those positions, or if you looked at them relative to what the top did, right? You end up in a situation where, okay, lower, the heavier the weight classes get, you're always going to have lower qualified athletes in those classes placing higher because of the nature of training. You know, the bigger you are, the longer it takes to develop to get to those levels. So, you know, 90 kilo girl, maybe that's her second meet. I mean, look at Q, right? That's her, Q's third meet, and she's placing that high in 75s. The 90s has got to be even more diluted. You know, to where I guess they just pull the mirror under your nose, and if it fogs up, you're qualified.
and it's not.
I'm not trying to take anything away from a 90 kilo girl. I'm just saying it's definitely lower qualified athletes are going to place higher. They're going to be there. There's just, how many people were there? 8. There's 8 people in that session.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it's not to take anything away from the lifter or their effort either. You know, yeah, we're making jokes about it, but my frustration with it is because of the depth of talent and lack of depth of talent in some of these, you have very exceptional lifters, of which we have many. We had 2 men's champions and a women's champion, the only team with multiple men's champions, the only team with both men's and women's champions, you know, first, second, and third place women. And I don't know. I guess we're just whining about it at the end of the day. But I would like to see the scoring changed to the way that track scoring is done, which is more top heavy. Would be scoring the first 8 places: 10 for first, 7 or 10, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And yes, it would have still meant that the 8th place, last place finisher in 90 plus and Pope would have still scored the same, 1 point each, but 1 point each is much different than 18 points each, because it's 10% of the top point score rather than 60%, 18 compared to 28, you know, rather than 1 compared to 10. So I think that would be a better system to it. I think it would be in the better interest of USAW to do that for several reasons. One, the way that we're going to get Olympic medals and international medals is by having the best lifters. You know, it's a mix of focusing on growing the sport in whole to bring more potential talent in, and you know, having more members and all that kind of stuff, but doing that without sacrificing pushing the top lifters higher and higher, because they are the ones who are gonna one day potentially, you know, win these medals. So it's the striking the balance of that, but also within the team structure, you know, and I think it is the team competition is important, because it is largely on, especially with the downfall of the OTC, largely on the privatized teams.
Yes,
you know, we are one of those most prominent ones, but you know, Juggernaut, MASH, Catalyst, Cal Strength, those teams to build their brand, to be able to better support lifters, to be able to better develop these lifters who can be potential international medalists. And I think a more reward to the top end of performance would better aid that. It would better incentivize that.
I also think that it doesn't make sense. It makes no sense to use the world championship scoring because, the classes are so unbalanced here. I mean, even internationally, they're a little bit off. We used to have a national scoring system that was top 10, and it may have been the track and field one, and they moved away from that a few years ago. It lends itself to bigger teams rather than better teams. If you have, or really not even better, just, or not bigger, sorry, but filling the classes that are light on competition versus, having all of your lifters packed into the most competitive sessions. I mean, we had Alyssa was in one of the most competitive, Courtney Batchelor, another competitive one, 63s were super competitive, 94s were competitive. There was a lot of like, it's not like, you have a team full of supers and 90s and 75s. I mean, six girls in there all doing the same total would probably rank as one of the best teams, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so it's off. It is, whatever.
That's the reality of it. I do think, though, that changing the scoring to be more rewarding to very high placing would incentivize teams, because the teams care about the team finish.
They do, yeah.
And it's going to incentivize them to develop better lifters rather than a more wide breadth of lifters across weight classes, where, because you could win the team championship with eight scorers kind of all, 8th to 12th place type of things, but which I don't think is in the... And it's certainly worthy of a debate, but I don't think that's what's in the best interest of USAW. All the lifters are important. All of them that qualified, congratulations. That's great. But to win international medals, which is the goal, is the mission statement of USAW, the reward needs to be given towards the production of the highest level athletes.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of our few complaints about this, and I expressed it to Phil quite.
Trifecta provides pre-cooked organic food delivered right to your door weekly to help fit with your Renaissance diet, fuel your hard training, improve your recovery, and make your life easier. Visit trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut.
The other frustrating thing and probably important teachable moment of it is about making lifts. I think on the men's or the women's side, overall, it was about 57% makes. And on the men's side, it was like 40, 41, 42% made lifts. And, we're not absolved from this. We had three bomb outs, one kind of injury related, but on the other side of that also had some 5-for-6s and some 4-for-6s and 5-for-6s. But on average, I think the women were going about 3.3 out of 6, and this is the meet as a whole, while the men were more like 2.7 or something out of 6. So Max, as a coach, what can people do to make more lifts?
The big thing is to evaluate why the misses are happening. Are we, in some cases, misses are happening at weights that they just should not happen at. And that would really essentially be weights that you lifters are making on a regular basis. If your best snatch is 103 kilos and you do that once in your whole life, then missing 102 or 103 or 104 it's not acceptable as much as it is, your probability of making that was low to begin with because it's such a high weight. But if your best snatch is 100 kilos and you're missing 96 or 93, that's, you know, it's less acceptable by far, because you should be making that lift. And if you're making it, you know, once every week or every couple of weeks when you go heavy, then there's no reason why you shouldn't be successful there. So, you know, evaluating that is big to see why the misses are happening. And then the other thing is, you know, refining technique, but also refining the competitive mindset. I think that a lot of people on our team were, you know, I think a lot of our misses were coming out of, you know, I don't want to point anyone out or single anyone out, because everyone is making and missing lifts. No one went 6 for 6. You know, there's misses that are coming. You know, there's a lot of things you can do to mitigate the chances of missing. One of them is be methodical about everything you do. Create a routine in your habits and your lifting. Every rep, every day, you know, never rush through anything. Never think that doing something different than what you've practiced will be successful. So that's a big one, is just really locking down and tightening down the perfecting of the movements. Whether your technique is good or bad is not relevant as much as your technique is extremely consistent, right? And not letting, you know, not letting panic, not letting anxiety change what you do and how you attempt it and how you approach the lift. You know, the way you clean and jerk 50 kilos should look the same way you clean and jerk 150 or 200. Your mental approach, all those things the same. And that's not to say go, you know, crazy and apeshit, but it's to be, you know, follow the exact same steps. You know, if you pop your left hand out first on 50, you pop your left hand out first on every other weight. Every single time. That's the first step. The second step, I think, is in selecting weights and establishing in your head what you're capable of and picking really good attempts. You know, if you're missing those attempts, it either wasn't the right attempt or you made a mistake. If you're already doing this in the first step and you're doing everything you can to have good technique and be consistent, the next thing is picking the right attempts. You know, and if you're picking the right attempts that are doable and they have good technique, then it's a mental issue of, you know, either the lifter isn't believing they're capable and they let doubt creep in, which changes things, or the lifter is not committed to making the lift. You know, they aren't putting in the, you know, they don't have the edge, I guess you could say, that sort of factor of like, you know, I'm gonna make sure this lift is without a doubt excellent. You know, the Colin scenario is good. The 162 we did in the first one was good, but you know, it wasn't good enough. So the second 62 was that much better. The second 62 was with an absoluteness to it that solidified it being perfect. And I think that's the kind of approach you got to take is every lift is going to be like that. And if people aren't putting in that effort or showing that, then you got to establish a reason for them to.
And in regards to selecting attempts, do you have any advice, you know, as far as picking an opener? Because that, I mean, if you don't make your opener, that's step one to a bomb out. So if you make your opener, you're really reduced your chances of bombing out at that point.
The only thing and missing your opener is missing your second. So, I mean, you know, in terms of making an opener, picking an opener, you should be that all starts in the training cycle. You know, your consistency with weights is a big thing. You know, we do a lot of like time singles workouts and just workouts with lots of repetitions in them, because it gives us a good perspective on how lifters lift. If you're doing 10 to 15 singles and you're missing half of them, even if you snatch 100 kilos, if you're missing half your lifts between 80 and 100, you know, there's no number in there that we could, you know, safely say, yeah, he's going to be good at 90 as an opener, or you know, we got to look at what it is. If you're doing 15, 20 singles in a workout and you hit 85, 90% of them every time, and you only start to miss when you're within 5 kilos of your best, then we know how stable you are and where you're gonna start. So in the training process, there has to be some kind of way for us to gauge what your abilities are, where you're consistent, you know, what you can actually do. Then in the meet, picking openers is, you know, depending on who you are, it's really easy to not bomb out. You know, bombing in more than a, you know, it's really easy to not bum out. Just pick attempts that are really, really easy.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's so hard about that. I mean, if you bomb out of one or two meets in a row, it's easy. You just stop bombing by opening lighter and being successful and building on that. It's tough when you're fighting and you're trying to score a lot of points, or you have to open a certain weight, or you're pushing really hard, because then you're picking numbers that are probably outside of that zone of 100%, right? So, I mean, there's people out there that believe, that have fucking formulas and numbers and percentages that you got to open at this, or take a weight, what's your best triple, or do this. I mean, a lot of it is coaching experience, you know, learn the athlete, learn the lifter, make a judgment call as to what you think is going to be right. Something we did in that podcast with Cohen that I thought was really great was he was describing his formula for creating his training cycle. And he said he just write it out over and over and over again until he found that what he looked at looked right. You know, and I believe as a coach, that's a big part of selecting openers for people, is just look at it over and over and over again until it looks like that's the right number. You know, and be smart about it and make sense of it, right? You know, hey, if we take this, we'll be here. If we take this, that, you can do this, you know, I mean, and then pick numbers you should make.
Yeah, and to me, there's definitely overlap with the peaking process for powerlifting, yeah, with attempt selection and competing for weightlifting. The things, you know, taken from what you're talking about too, that we can really distill it down to for people, because one, you got to control what you can control. Don't worry about what you can't. That's from a training standpoint and at the competition. You know, be methodical about your technique. Be precise. Have your process to approaching the lift, you know, hand placement, foot placement, everything that you do, that's within your control and repeatable. Because when you get to the meet, when you're at nationals, and it's a shit show in the back room, you know, stuff isn't going to be just the way that you like it at your own gym, or you train in your garage or whatever, and you get to put your song on and everyone stops to watch you. No, they don't give a shit. They ain't stopping. You know, there's people walking in front of you, all that stuff. So, you know, take control of the stuff that you can and put aside what you can't. I think this one for powerlifting and weightlifting, but maybe even more so for weightlifting, is you got to create the pressure situations. You got to practice the pressure.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, having all the time in the world to go to set up and set everything up just the way you want for yourself in training makes it a lot easier to make that lift than, okay, you're up, you have 1 minute, you know, or we're jockeying around attempts and the amount of time you have is changing more or less, whatever it is, and now you got to go out and go. You know, if our lifters here weren't doing those on the minute work and that little bit more pressure situation stuff, well, then maybe Kristen Pope's not running from the back warm up platform onto the platform to make a clean and jerk. You know, practice the pressure situation, because competing is a skill, just like technique is. It has to be practiced. So create those pressure situations for yourself, whether it's time, whether it's environment, all that stuff. Practice it. I think be realistic with yourself. You know, something we failed to do with Sam Ernst, or Sam failed to do with us. You know, if you're training 4 kilos over body weight, the number's got to be adjusted. You know, and this isn't, you know, to criticize Sam. He's going to be a very good lifter. He's only, what, 19 years old?
Yeah, he's 18.
Yeah, and he's going to be very good. And he's certainly not the only person to have made this mistake ever, or we're not as coaches. But, you know, be realistic. Don't think that, oh yeah, even though I've been 4 kilos over my body weight, I'll go, it'll be fine. You know, I handle the weight cut. I bounce back from a weight cut well. I bounce back from a weight cut well are probably some of fucking famous last words of the lifter, because you don't. The odds are you probably don't.
Yeah.
And so be realistic in making those adjustments. And you gotta always, you know, take what the day gives you to build your total, to make lifts. You know, I don't have the data in front of me, but I'm sure if we were to look at the medalists, you're going to see a lot of 4 for 6s, a lot of 5 for 6s, and a couple 6 for 6s.
Yeah.
Very hard to have a successful day without having successful lifts to go along with it.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's the, I don't remember. I want to say Q'Anna's session was really good because I know that Taylor made five lifts.
No.
And I know that
four lifts, three snatches and no, she only made three or four lifts.
No, but, didn't she make two clean and jerks?
I think she opened at 120. Mary, she missed it on the press out.
She made 16, then 20. She pressed it out the first time and then made it 20. And I think she made two or three snatches.
Two snatches.
Well, in her case, example of there's a 4 for 6 that wins it, but she's also kind of head and shoulders above other people in her abilities.
Yes.
So you're going to see, I mean, kind of is an understatement, but you're going to see a lot more people like that where they might miss or make a few lifts here and there and win it. Or if the competition is really kind of soft.
But even so, four for six for her, 5 for 6 for Q. 4 for 6, which should have been 5 for 6, you know, for Colin, or should have been 4 for 5, I guess, taking away the jury overturn. Alyssa, 5 for 6. Mike Fox.
Alyssa's a great example where Alyssa's 5 for 6 was, I mean, that was against other 5 for 6s. Yeah. And that's just, nobody was winning that with two lifts.
Yeah.
You know.
So you can come into the meet with all the goals and everything that you want, but then when, you know, in the words of Mike Tyson, like when you get, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Well, everyone has the numbers they want to take until they miss a warm up, you know, until they get something overturned, and then you adjust, and then you try and lift the most weight you can that day.
Yes. Exactly.
Not the most weight you hope that you can lift, that you wish that you could lift, that you told your 17 Instagram followers that you were going to lift, and then you know, whatever. Like, you got to take what the day gives you.
Is it's a sport, you know? It's like going in thinking you're going to be, you know, I did 185 one time in the gym. I'm going to go in and try 190, or I got to leave. You know, it's like, Go in to make the list you need to win. I guarantee you most of the people on the international podium are not taking PR attempts for win. And when they do, it's a Hail Mary Steiner situation where the guy goes out there for 8 kilo, 10 kilo PR for a gold medal to win. And it, you know, it's a heroic story.
Yeah,
a lot of them are taking lifts that they've done 15 times in training because it's all about being successful. And even more so now the rules changing without the bodyweight class. It's all about being able to make three consecutive lifts with a very, very tight grouping. And so that's a huge part of the sport is getting your ego out of your head, getting all those things out of your mind, and just successful attempts will produce big results.
Yeah, you don't think that Colin wanted to take 200 rather than 199?
Yeah.
But, you know, 199 is the number that's working. And he could have made 200, but it was all part of the strategy. It was all part of taking what the day gives them.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, overall, fantastic weekend by Team Juggernaut Lifters, by Coach Max, by Joanne, by USAW, all the volunteers. Very thankful for all the hard work there. You know, cool to see the national meets continue to grow, both in production, in quality of lifting. You know, very, very competitive weight classes, lots of very competitive weight classes. Put together a strong Pan Am team for the U.S. and you know, just a lot of positive things to build on. And you know, once they change the team scoring system to the way that I said, then they'll really be on to something.
Yeah.
And what do you got coming up, Max?
I got a seminar coming up in June 3rd and 4th in College Station. So that's going to be good at Brazos Valley Barbell.
Mm-hmm.
Almost misspoke there. And then I have another one in North Carolina. I can't remember the date on that one.
July 8th. July 8th.
July 8th, yeah. Interesting, I'll actually be doing a seminar, just a very short squat seminar at Facebook headquarters.
Well, then.
coming up in the next few weeks somewhere. We're trying to organize it right now. Me and Zuckerberg are going back and forth on it.
Zuck.
He's a staunch supporter of the Ripito Lomar
Sport. He would be. Zuckerberg's probably neckbearding all over Reddit about starting strength. Well, I have no seminars that people can actually sign up for because Austin is sold out. But if you are in the Austin area on June 3rd, Marissa and I will be at the Naturally Fit game. So come and check that out for sure. Beyond that, we'll just be gallivanting across Europe for the IPF Raw Worlds. Online coaching. We've got it. You need it and we've got it. Weightlifting, powerlifting, masters weightlifting, because we didn't really get to address it here, but Max was away in New Zealand and just crushing the masters weightlifting world, led by the master of disaster, Joanne Ada, who was, yep. Maybe we'll have a bigger discussion on part of this in another episode, but the best weightlifter there and then never had a penis category. And but he had five lifters there?
Yes.
Five lifters, four total medalists. So for the master stuff, if you're looking for good master's coaching, the guy in the computer is the man on that. And then our newly launched super total coaching, so weightlifting plus powerlifting, all mashed up into one. So go check that out at juggernautcoaching.com. Beyond that, he's Max Ada, @Max_Ada on Instagram, Max Ada on Facebook. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining. Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. If you like the podcast, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Write us a funny review. We love seeing the funny reviews. We love getting the good ratings and eking up those iTunes charts, and your support really helps us out. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Best fitness YouTube content there is. And otherwise, I guess we'll just see you next week.
All right.
All right.
Out, guys.